1889 Labs is an independent publisher dedicated to producing the best strange fiction conceivable by the human brain, catering to a specific demographic of men and women between the ages of 3 and 97. We print everything from kids' books to serious stories for adults. Our goal is to bring you an amazing adventure on screen and off. We hope you'll take us up on the offer. Check out 1889 Labs at 1889.ca.
From around the globe, this is Web Fiction World. And welcome to the 7th episode of Web Fiction World. My name is Anna Hart. I'm here with my sidekick, MCM, to entertain and amuse you. Last episode, MCM stumbled his way through interviewing the lovely Aaron Klitsky about why unicorns don't write web fiction. He sounds terrified. You should give it a listen if you haven't already. Today's topic is fan fiction, the ins and outs, its relationship to web fiction, and a bunch of other stuff, as suggested by a couple of you listeners who were eager to hear our thoughts on the subject. We'll have a reading, as always, but before we get to all of that, I'd like to introduce today's guest. Here with us is CSK, author, self-titled slacker, and the problem child of the four-woman writing collective Creative Wenches. I can't speak, sorry. Hello, Kay. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello.
So, Kay, before we dissect fan fiction, let's just have a little chat about you and your work. First of all, obviously, you're an author as well, and you write Susie's Box, the Journal of a Disturbed Girl. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
It's a story, but it's also like a mixed media art project. Susie is a 9-year-old girl who lives in the suburbs, and she's kind of in this nebulous world where it's before she's really aware that she's kind of poorer than everyone else around her. And she keeps this journal, which she writes using found objects. So a lot of it is like stuff that I've dug out of the recycling and like just crap that's around the house. Stuff that's like 20 years old. Just things. And So she keeps her journal on it and she just recounts her life like with her brother and her sister. And these characters are based on my nieces and nephew, who take up a great deal of my time because I'm kind of like this other part-time mom to them. And my niece had, she's a big fan of the Wimpy Kid series, and she had asked me about something for her because Wimpy Kid series is kind of geared towards boys. And so I told her that I would write a story for girls, for someone in her age bracket, which is the 9-year-old demographic. And that's how kind of Susie's Box came around. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah,
hello, everyone.
Go ahead.
It's me. Okay. So what does mixed media mean?
So it's not just like pure writing. A lot of like Susie's journal entries are photographs of things like, I might find a flyer in the mail or take apart an envelope or write on a cereal box. And so I write Susie's journals as if I were Susie. So I use my non-dominant writing arm and I kind of recreate a child's script as she's writing her own journal. And like there's like doodles and like little drawings and things like that. So it's not just like text on a page or like digital text in like a blog format, but like actual like, yeah, a physical, like this could never be recreated in like a book because all of these things really exist. And like there is a box that I keep Susie's journal entries in. So yeah, I don't know.
I was looking at the website actually, and I was wondering because I thought, either you have terrible handwriting or you've forced some kid to.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's really interesting because like using my left hand, there was a point where it became problematic because my left hand actually became really proficient. Like I think I might be ambidextrous or something because it started to look too good, and I had to try to switch it up, like change my grip and do different things. Yeah, yeah, but. I tried to study my niece's handwriting, and hopefully it's kind of recreated.
It looks authentic to me.
Looks really authentic.
Good, good. That's what I was going for. I'd like people to believe that Susie is the one who's actually making things happen.
Where did the idea come from originally? But you said the wimpy kid thing. What is Wimpy Kid?
Ah.
Yeah, the Wimpy Kid series, it's the Greg Kinnear, whatever his name is. Greg Kinney. I am getting kind of an echo here.
All right, what we're going to do is I'm going to make note of the time, and I'm going to hang up the call and recall.
Yay!
Yay! Hello?
Yay.
Hello.
Echo? Echo. No, echo.
Echo.
No, echo on my end? Yeah, that sounds good.
We are ready to go again. Just let me know if we need to ever do that again. So.
Okay.
Cool. All right. So you were saying, obviously, the Wimpy Kid, I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm uncivilized.
Yes, okay. What?
It might be an American thing. It's like a 5 or 6 book series. I think it's still going. They made a movie about it eventually. I think there's a second movie too. Super, super popular among kids. It's like one of the most demanded books in libraries. It's getting kids to read from the ages of like 8 to 14. And it's basically about this. I think it's supposed to tell Greg's life about when he was like this awkward youth, kind of pre-adolescent, trying to navigate his way through school life and family life and being bullied and being that wimpy kid who like, you know, can't really stand up for himself, is kind of a weenie. And it mixes art with text and storytelling. So like the kids were just crazy for it, but my niece was really wanting something that was more for girls, something that more like she could relate to. Mm-hmm. And there are books on the market right now that are geared towards that audience that are trying to capture that the female wimpy kid audience. But my niece looked at them and she didn't like any of those books. She kind of like complained like, oh, it's so gross. Like all they talk about is shoes, and it's just really kind of the stereotypical like what does the young girl worry about. And so that's when I started talking to her, asking her questions about what she wanted to see in a story, and then that was the creation of Susie's Box, was me asking her questions about what she wanted to see, what kinds of characters she wanted to be in there. And then I just decided, well, I'll just throw all the kids in there, because what would make her want to read it more than she being the main character. And she and her siblings are like Susie and Leah, Susie's little sister, and her older brother, who hasn't actually been officially given a name in the series yet. She just constantly refers to him as my big brother, my older brother. And it just makes sense because none of my friends knew who my siblings were either, because I never used their names.
Do you find a lot of kids actually like read online, or is that I've never really considered? I don't know. A lot of online fiction is geared towards an older audience, I'd say, and I don't know how big an audience there is of like 9, 10-year-olds.
Right,
so.
Right. I was kind of I put it online so that my niece could get it anywhere that she was. And then she could kind of show her friends. I really didn't have an idea of like trying to market this thing on a larger scale. But actually, I think you'd be kind of surprised, because the kids were telling me like they're aged 3, 10, and 14. So they were telling me that kids at their schools nowadays are having Kindles and like all those e-readers. It's like the new thing, and the schools are trying to phase out a lot of paper. So yeah. I don't think that it's too far away. I don't think we're quite there yet. Like I think Susie's also appeals to people who are kind of nostalgic about their childhoods. Just like thinking back and remembering the awkwardness of childhood and just, I don't know, the way a child thinks, I think, is really fascinating to adults. Like that kind of explains the popularity of like Calvin and Hobbes and, you know, stories like that.
Yeah.
I have a 9-year-old daughter and she's, you know, an obsessive Wimpy Kid reader, and she has that same reaction, which is it doesn't really speak to her, and the knockoffs for girls are very much just kind of like they miss the mark. And I've talked to lots of people in various industries that try and appeal to young girls that way, and they're absolutely convinced that shoes and things like that are the things that really sell. And looking over your stuff, it's like, yes, this is what they're after. Why doesn't anyone else see this? So then kind of coming at it from that perspective, what do you think feel about like writing for kids as opposed to writing for like a more general audience? Is it fun or is it mind-blowingly difficult?
I think it's both. Because I am stuck in that space where I'm like, are they going to get this? I don't know. Like some of the jokes, like I'll put something up and she'll be like, I didn't get that. And I'm like, oh, okay. But then if I sit down and explain it, then she'll laugh and laugh. And then she'll be like, I have to tell my friends about this. And it's kind of like, oh, okay. So, I mean, it might be more of a thing that a parent will sit down with their child with and kind of explore it together. I think, because also the idea with Susie, I wanted to address things like economic status, like race, like, you know, like different things, but from a child's perspective, you know, like, she doesn't really necessarily know that she's poor, but when she goes to school, she doesn't have the same clothes that everyone else wears, and kind of going through that, and so I think it's a good way to create some kind of conversation between parent and child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know, but I am constantly struggling with trying to make it accessible to kids, but at the same time, like making adults like enjoy it too.
And so Susie, it updates Susie's box updates every Wednesday, as far as I'm aware, and it's part. Or it's somehow tied to this creative wrenches that you're part of, as well
yes.
as writing collective. Can you tell us, I mean, you're a member of it, and who are the three other women, and what do you girls get up to?
So, it's a writing collective that we kind of, we got together because we wanted a way to encourage each other to keep writing, because like when you're by yourself, it's really kind of lonely and you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. And so me and SGL, she is kind of the head mama hen. She kind of clucks at everybody, makes sure that we're all on task. And she was the one that really got us all together to try and update something on a regular basis. And T.E. Waters is the other one. She kind of does, it's like a sci-fi, fantasy, mecha fictional story. And then E.K., she does also kind of a sci-fi, fantasy blend. I don't know. We're all very different styles. SGL is also an artist in addition to her Tales of the Big Bad Wolf fantasy series. Writer. Basically it was to encourage each other to write, to review each other's work, also to collaborate on different projects together. So the idea is that if I wanted to do something, which I have for SGL's story about the Big Bad Wolf and her Red Riding Hood story, I could just do it, you know, and then send it to her or put it on the Creative Wenches website. And so the thing that I did was I retold her story with Barbies, mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a photo series, and yeah, I mean, it's just a fun way to like be creative and continually generate content while encouraging each other to update on a regular basis. That's basically what Creative Wenches is about.
All right, we're going to fix the echo again. Sorry.
Why is this happening?
I have no idea. There are so many things to worry about as far as where the volume comes from. I'm blaming Skype because I don't hear anything. Which is the most important part because I'm recording it. But hang on.
Yeah. Echo?
Echo.
Echo.
No echo.
No echo. Yay.
No. Is Kay, are you clear?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This has never happened before. I guess Skype is being...
Is anybody on a wireless connection?
Oh, yeah, I am. Oh, is it me then?
It's possible. But,
well,
just keep an eye on it.
We can just soldier onwards. As long as, I mean, you're, Fess, you're not getting it, so the...
Well, true, but I've been through the echo before. It's kind of hard to speak when you hear yourself...
Echoing back? Yeah, I'm like, I keep getting distracted. I'm like, oh god, I'm echoing.
just type it in the chat and then we'll stop and restart.
Yep. Right, I've asked about creative... where was I... So, is there anything else, Kay, that you wanted to mention that I've forgotten to ask about? I mean, you've said, I was reading on your bio, you're also into, like, theater and performance art and playing with children's toys. So you've kind of got this creative background going on. What else have you worked on? Is Susie's Box your only... Obviously, you're into fan fiction as well, which we'll talk about in a bit, but is Susie's Box your only original fiction, so to speak, or have you other projects as well?
I have other projects that I'm tentatively trying to put together, but none of it is currently on the web. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing, you know, and it's always like this question of like, what do you want to share, and like, what do you want the public to be able to access, and right now I'm just not at that stage where I think I can put my things out there, you know. I did actually run a blog for a short time, but I shut it down when I started Susie, basically. I don't think I have any other projects.
And when with regards to fan fiction, like on that side, how are you involved in the fan fiction community?
Well, I've been a reader for a very long time. I mean, back in the like mid-90s, I was just like this little gawky pre-adolescent. And like back then, there was really no site that archived all of this stuff. You had to like actually look on individual websites back when there was like no real search engine either. And you had to find like people who would just post links and like websites that would dedicate themselves to archiving different things, but nothing was ever complete. And until finally like fanfiction.net was created, and it was like, everything's there. Everything you could possibly want is there. And you know, everybody of course flocked, and like their servers got overloaded and you know, all of that. So like I was really an avid reader for a very long time, and through my different fandoms, I met a lot of different writers, and eventually was encouraged to start writing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I wouldn't consider myself to be like a fanfic writer. Like some people really dedicate themselves to it and just have these amazing like laundry lists of stories they've written. But I think what really fascinated me was the community, because it really fostered really deep friendships. And actually, the other two co-founders, SGL and T.E. Waters, with the Creative Wenches Collective, I met them through fan fiction, and we wrote together, and we were really heavily involved in this like fandom together. And so all these years later, 10 years later, we're like, well, let's start something else and work on original fiction together. And that's what we've done.
Yeah. I think I made a lot of connections through fan fiction and transferred over as well. But I think this would be probably a good place to have a quick break before we dig deep into fan fiction, which is MCM has a secret passion for it. You know, I know he reads it secretly at night, like 2 a.m., some weird kind of slash or so. I don't know.
Maybe you drag me into this.
He has no idea what I'm talking about. Right, so let's just take a quick break and have a reading. When we come back, we'll be chatting about the wonderful world of fan fiction and MCM's weird perversions. But for now, here's a story for your listening pleasure.
Today's reading comes from Donald Conrad, from a piece called When the Bus Stopped, which he actually had it on his site, too. So this is also him reading his piece, When the Bus Stopped.
He knew it was coming the way he knew a cold sore was going to sprout on his lip. It was a sixth sense feeling, the twinge of something erupting without showing itself to the other senses. He was going to be picked on today. Seymour Decker could feel the eyes on him when the bus came to a stop, or maybe it was just the sun reflecting off the bright yellow paint. He checked the side as it arrived, scanning for open windows, projectile ports for the unwary, but they were all shut. Studying the sand near the curb, waiting for the flipper sound of the bus door to open, he stepped up into the open maw and was immediately swallowed by the big yellow monster. The bus lurched forward just as he swung into a seat, the only seat left available to him. For three-quarters of the trip down the throat of the yellow beast, kids sat at the outer limits of their seats. Seymour didn't challenge any of these seat hogs for fear of bringing attention to himself. In a battle of wits, Seymour wasn't necessarily unarmed. He was an imaginative kid. It was just a matter of being a little slow in the draw. He didn't remove his backpack, but slouched into it like ill-fitting body armor. He had the seat to himself and sat close to the window, watching the blur of yards, fences, and bushes go by as if the bus remained stationary and the world rushed past. Awareness crept in like the pause between television show and commercial. The bus had gone silent, never a good thing. "What's this?" a voice said directly behind him, which he recognized as Aaron Bomer. "Nobody brings lunch anymore, Seymour Pecker!" That was Aaron's favorite bit of name-calling for Seymour, who had to admit his name was an easy target. Jason White cackled at that and sing-songed, "See my dicker!" It was certainly a lesser heckle. Aaron had the brown bag open, looking in when Seymour turned. "Hey, that's mine!" He reached for it, but the backpack weighed him down. Slow on the draw again. His mother must have left the zipper open at the top of his pack. Seymour scrambled his legs around to the aisle and stood. He didn't advance because to do so would put him in the middle of Aaron's group. The group consisted of Jason White, Kyle Morrison, Brad Torkel, and of course Aaron Bomer. The others would likely act differently without Aaron around. Aaron orchestrated everything they did, and they followed his lead. Would follow him straight off a cliff if that was where he was going. With the lunch sack cupped in his left hand, Aaron pulled out a bag of potato chips and tossed them back, saying, "Here you go, Brad. You like chips, don't you?" Brad caught them between two open palms the way he would catch a particularly bothersome fly. There was a loud pop and chip crumbs escaped to the bus floor. "Thanks, Dicker," Brad said, and then poured the remaining chip crumbs into his mouth. "Come on, guys, that's my lunch. Give it back." Aaron removed the sandwich bag containing three chocolate chip cookies. He smiled and tossed the bag back to Kyle. "Wow," Kyle said. "Didn't figure you for holding out with the chocolate chip cookies." Seymour saw what came out of the bag next, and his mind started reeling for a way to stop this, for a way to rewind like he could with his favorite DVD at home. His mother rarely put candy bars in his lunch, but this morning she had included 3 snack-sized Snicker bars. Aaron tossed them back to Jason one at a time. I can't eat those because I'm allergic to peanuts, and I don't like them anyway. Seymour was breathing hard, hyperventilating, and he felt an exhilarant rush of adrenaline. His body was experiencing a fight-or-flight moment, and Seymour wanted nothing to do with either one. His left hand had a white-knuckle grip on the seat back, and his right was clenched in a fist at his side. "You guys can't do this," said Seymour. "I'll starve and have to tell someone." "Yeah? Who? Who are you going to tell?" At the bottom of the bag was a sandwich which Aaron began unwrapping. "Hey, will you look at this? My favorite, Blow Me and Sleaze." It was Seymour's favorite, too, and his mum put a light scrim of peanut butter on the cheese side just the way he liked it. But he only thought of this for half a beat. His main concern, trying to find a way to stop this madness, was a moot point as well. Aaron stood there, a smug look on his face, taking bites from the bologna and cheese sandwich. Seymour couldn't contain himself anymore. Aaron was the reason others acted the way they did. Aaron was the one who handed out his lunch to everyone. It was all Aaron's fault. He was a mean kid who didn't deserve to live. "I wish you'd just drop dead, Aaron Bomer." Chewing a little slower, Aaron's face began to contort with a querulous look. He dropped the sandwich, and his eyes went wide. Clutching at his constricting throat, he dropped to his knees. His mouth moved like a fish out of water, or maybe he was trying to say something. But this time he was slow on the draw, and he never had a chance to point out that he had something in his own backpack to ward off the symptoms he was experiencing, symptoms he knew that had to be born of his peanut allergy. The bus driver saw the whole thing in his expansive rear-view mirror and stopped the bus. That's when Aaron Bomer fell back, dead as a doornail. When the bus stopped, Seymour Decker became just Decker, the kid you didn't want to mess with. When the bus stopped, the legend of Decker began. We'll be right back.
That was I Ate All the Food by Furries in a Blender off of the Violet Kingdom album at lapfoxtracks.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at WebFiction Radio. Email us at webfictionworld@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Okay. Well, I have to leave a bit of a gap there. Jeez. All right, here we go. So that was a great reading and or two. I know that I am pleased by the readings because it was for my play. Anyway, so now we're going to be talking about fan fiction and how wonderful fan fiction is and how it ties into web fiction, which is, yeah, separate yet the same. So I'll give it back to Anna because my brain hasn't turned on yet. What do you want from me? I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning reading all sorts of things. So
excuses.
Yeah.
Do you, MCM, do you have any experience reading or writing fan fiction, just to get that out of the way?
I've read a lot here and there. I have not written any that I can think of. Yeah, no, I haven't. So I know that makes me the odd one. What can I say? So, how about you? Have you? Well, we already know you have. It's all
well, maybe
the stuff that kids
for,
can't read.
Since you're clearly like a noob, and maybe well, so, some listeners might, you know, be less familiar. How about? Why don't we just quickly define what fan fiction is, and if there's any terms that people should be aware of? Kay, how would you define it in like a sentence? Go.
Oh, great. Fan fiction is fiction that is written using characters that are from another series, book, whatever, something that's owned by another greater power. And
wow.
Posted somewhere? I don't know. Really on the spot there. I'm so not ready for that question.
It was evil of me.
Can we derail this and we can go like into huge theological discussions based on that definition? That would be excellent.
Greater power.
I don't know, authors, network studios, publishing companies.
Or just copy, well, I guess I'd like to think of fan fiction as playing with someone else's sandbox. That's how I'd define it. But and there's all sorts of funny words like that I learned when I was first delving into the fan fiction world of like fanon and canon and Mary Sue and fandom and that kind of, there's loads of them. I can't even remember half of them. But so personally, I was always into Harry Potter fan fiction and some random animes like Sayuki and what was it? I can't remember. Yu Yu Hakusho, some kind of random one. Anyway, Kay, what are you? What fandoms are you into?
Oh, I'm just a super nerd. I don't know. I like a lot of random stuff. The one that kind of changed my life, as it were, where I met my fellow creative wenchers, was Rurouni Kenshin, which is a manga and an anime, both. And we were very hardcore shippers of a pairing that never ever existed at all in the series, and there was like never even a hint of it, but we were very obsessed with it, so we had to stick together very staunchly in order to promote our pairing, which no one understood. It fostered very deep friendships, and actually a lot of the other fic writers all were aspiring to be, you know, like real writers, so I find that really interesting. I am also a fan of the Star Trek reboot. It's just, it's so much fun, all the new characters and all the new actors, and it's just I think there's a lot of really good writers out there that are doing really fun things.
I never really got into Star Trek. I know it's like the original, and wasn't it say all like the first fan fiction ever written or ever put on the net, wasn't it a Star Trek one, or that was the first community that grew in popularity? Was it something like that? Did I invent that?
No, basically, yeah, they're saying that Star Trek, the original series, birthed the modern fan fiction as we know it today through fanzines. And the first one was like a Spock Kirk thing. I don't know. But I'm assuming there's so much Slash. Like, basically, they're saying that Star Trek, the original series, is responsible for the birth of Slash, which, for people who don't know, is when you take two male characters who are normally heterosexual and you kind of make them go for each other.
Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy, yay!
Which I don't really understand Slash, but it has a huge market out there.
I'll confess to having read quite a lot of it, but it's okay. MCM, what did you read? Or is it, you know, not, is it not safe for our PG-13 audiences?
Oh yeah, so not safe. No, it's like little bits of everything, mostly curiosity, because and this is getting into the technical terms and whatnot, but it's like from a, well, I have like big questions about fan fiction and when you basically cross the line into web fiction proper, as I guess you would put it. Like, let's say you have Harry Potter and you have Harry and somebody other than Draco, but Draco?
Snape.
And other than Snape. God. All right, let's just drop Harry Potter, because this is a loaded conversation. I don't want to go there. But let's say you have these two characters and, you know, their lives have been laid out in a lot of detail in the books, but there are gaps, and so there's canon, and then there's the stuff that the fan fiction writers will create outside of canon. And if enough of those fan fiction writers then use that as kind of like they're all building on a common base that's kind of attached to but not the same as canon, at what point does that become legitimate, or does it ever become legitimate, or is it always just
canon?
Okay, so there you
like
go.
Like, everyone knows that, you know, in fanon, it's kind of commonly accepted that Draco Malfoy is actually not that bad. He's just, like, abused, but he's actually, you know, redeemable. And you know, that's why him and Hermione always end up together, because he's clever. And Hermione should not be with Ron, because, like, Ron is thick. Like, it just makes no sense. End of rant.
Why don't you like Ron?
He's stupid.
He's not stupid. He's misunderstood.
His only redeeming quality is he's good at chess, and that's just such a ham-fisted way of making him semi-clever.
There you go, see? Or something.
I'm pretty sure Draco is better endowed as well.
You know what? We don't need... This conversation doesn't need to be derailed so quickly.
I'm distracted by someone typing notes. Right. So, let's back to a more professional approach. Where can we find fan fiction? I was going to say web fiction there. So fanfiction.net is really one of the biggest sites. I know there's a lot of sub sites. Like, I used to look at GrangerEnchanted.net, which was a lot of, it's all fan fiction with Hermione as the protagonist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's loads. I was very big into the Harry Potter scene, but I think fanfiction.net is probably the first go-to point. I mean, would you agree, right, Kay, or is there?
Right, yeah. I tried to do a little bit of digging on this, and supposedly fanfiction.net has the largest fanfiction archive, like, on the web. Also the largest archive of Harry Potter fanfiction. I don't know if that's still true, but that was still true as of last year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would definitely consider it the go-to place. The first place to go to if you're looking for something, especially if it's not well-known. I would try there first. But, I mean, now we have great search engines, so I'm not sure if you'd really need to go to a website before just doing a general search.
And is fiction, because Fiction Press is the sister site to fanfiction.net, as far as I'm aware, and it just hosts original fiction. Are they, right. They're related, aren't they? They're run by the same people.
Yep. At one point, fanfiction.net allowed original fiction as well, but it just got so bogged down with trying to like host everything at once that they decided to make fictionpress.com as the sister site where everything original would just move there. And yeah, that's what they've done since. And I think it's a really good model. I guess there was like mixed feelings about it, because some people who were writing fan fiction felt that their original work couldn't receive the same attention on a site that only hosted original stuff. And I, in some ways it is kind of true, because it's really hard to find stuff on Fiction Press just because there's so much there. And how do you search for something that you're looking for based on like keywords, general search terms, you know?
I guess, you know, with fan fiction, you generally know what you're looking for. Like MCM looks for, I don't know, Fred George fan fiction.
Why?
That's because
really?
He likes that kind of stuff. But you know, when you go to an original fiction site, I mean, you search by genre, or it doesn't really have tags. Because one thing that's really good about Web Fiction Guide is you can search by tags. So you can look up vampires, you know, or unicorns,
right.
Which is Fiction Press doesn't really have, I don't think. But the only thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, you could do a general search of vampires, but yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Other places make it more accessible, I think, with tags.
And the only other thing I used to write on fanfiction.net, and then I started, you know, delving into original fiction, being adventurous, but I wasn't on Fiction Press for long because I felt no one ever found my work, and I think it's ugly. Like, I don't really like the way they lay out the text.
Right.
Maybe that's just me. Have you posted anything on Fiction Press as well? Or
I'm trying to remember, because I joined as soon as they created the site, because I did have original work that was on fanfiction.net that I had to move over. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've been on there since I moved my stuff, really. I followed a couple of other like fellow writers that I had already like liked their work, but I haven't kept up with Fiction Press at all.
I wonder why, like, because the community on fanfiction.net is quite strong, but it doesn't translate over to Fiction Press at all. And,
no.
I don't know why. MCM, any thoughts? Or are you just going to like sit there quietly and sulk?
I totally agree with everything that you guys are saying. Completely.
You know, it's kind of my secret pleasure with reading fan fiction is finding like those authors that are just so mind-blowing good, so mind-blowingly good that you just sit there and you wonder, like, why aren't they publishing something for real? And then when you start digging around, you find out they are published. Like, that, to me, that is the greatest joy, is when you find those fan fiction writers that are actually publishing books at the same time. And, like, they're doing, like, they're writing concurrently with each other. Oh, that is really, really fun. I found, like, maybe, like, 3 or 4 different authors that way. It's really interesting.
Can you remember any examples?
I don't know if I want to out anyone, but I do know that there was one, I think she wrote Jane Austen fan fiction, and she actually published a book that was kind of Jane Austen themed, like Regency themed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another writer that we, that was in like our little fandom thing. She's a romance writer. She had like a ton of books, like 20 books under her belt. And I was like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? Like hanging out with us on fanfiction.net and on like different blog communities. And I was like, you're writing real books. You're making a living off of your writing. Like, it was pretty amazing.
I mean, it is the only example I can think of she transitioned over. Cassandra Clare was quite popular for her Harry Potter fan fiction, and then she's now moved over and she's publishing books.
She was the one that had the huge scandal, though, right?
Yeah, there was that huge scandal where she asked for her computer broke or something, and then she asked for money. And then, I mean, I've actually read her series, her original, the one that's published now, and it's quite good, but having read all her fan fiction, I can see a lot of almost traces of things that are reused. It gets better later on when she, you know, expands a bit outside. But if you read the first one, City of Bones or something, it reads a lot like her fan fiction, and there's bits that she uses that I'm like, you use that for Draco, and now you're using it for your character.
You're positively obsessed with this. You need to, you know, just take a moment and, you know, deal with your Draco obsession.
You're jealous because you don't understand.
Okay, we'll go with that.
So, like, why should people be interested in fan fiction then? Like, what do you think fan fiction teaches us? Why is MCM so ignorant?
Oh, he's just missing out. That's what it is. I mean, of course, the draw of fan fiction is that when you write something, you immediately have an audience. You know, anyone who's into the fandom, if you're writing a pairing, anyone who's into that pairing, anyone who's, you know, like all these different things. And like fan fiction serves different purposes. Like one of them might be if a show got canceled, people will finish the story that never got finished, mm-hmm. or certain plot lines that never got tied up, or various gaps in character arcs or storylines. It's a lot of like wish fulfillment of like, I wish they had covered that. And then, you know, the writer or whatever just didn't, completely neglected it. And so that's where fan fiction a lot of times comes in to try and fill in the holes, the emptiness in our lives that we're feeling with our fandom. And so I think that people can find, you know, a lot of love there. There's the audience, there's the feedback, there's support. And then while you're writing your thing, someone else is writing something and saying, hey, read this too. And then you're like, oh, that's great. And it's a horrible cycle, a never-ending horrible cycle where you will never find free time ever again because you're so busy reading other people's work.
Agreed. I think it's also like, I mean, for me, I found it, it kind of helped me develop my writing style. And because, you know, the whole world building is something I've always had difficulty with. So then having someone else's characters in a world I could play with, it helped me develop, you know, characterization and dialogue and just all the basics, the nuts and bolts of writing. I would attribute fan fiction to, like, my success on that side.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point.
At first, we're getting echo.
Okay. Hang on for just a second.
Hey. This is an adventurous episode. Echo. No, right. Echo. Good.
All right. I got a question here. I want to ask, has anybody here heard the John Freeman fan fiction based off the Half-Life 2 series?
No.
No.
There's this video game called Half-Life 2 with its main character, Gordon Freeman.
Yeah. And I know Half-Life.
Yeah. There was a fan fiction that was written by a little kid, complete with horrible, horrible grammar and everything. It was like John Freeman. It starts out like this. Well, okay, somebody he wrote it, and then somebody did a dramatic reading of it. And then later, somebody took the dramatic reading of it and turned it into a remix. And then somebody took the remix and turned it into a YouTube video.
I've just found it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. And if you're talking about web fiction this much, I think I want to put it in the show somewhere. like maybe one of the readings. It starts out with,
and now, an epic reading of an epic fan fiction. Half-Life, full life consequences. John Freeman, who was Gordon Freeman's brother, was one day in an office typing on a computer. He got an email from his brother that said that aliens and monsters were attacking his place and asked him for help. So he went. John Freeman got his computer shut down and wet on the platform to go up to the roof of the building where he left his motorcycle and normal people clothes because he was in his office lab coat. John Freeman got on his motorcycle and said, "It's time for me to live up to my family name and face full life consequences." So he had to go. John Freeman ramped off the building and did a backflip and landed. He kept driving down the road and made sure there was no zombies around because he didn't have weapons. The countrysides were nice and the plants were singing and the birds and the sun was almost down from the top of the sky. The mood was set for John Freeman's quest to help his brother where he was. John Freeman looked around the countryside and said, "It's a good day to do what has to be done by me and help my brother to defeat the enemies." John Freeman was late, so he had to drive really fast. A cop car was hidden nearby, so when John Freeman went by, the cops came and wanted to give him a ticket. Here John Freeman saw the first monster because the cop was possessed and had head crabs. "I can't give you my license, officer," John Freeman said. "Why not?" said the head crab officer back to John Freeman. "Because you are a head crab zombie." So John Freeman shot the officer in the head and drove off thinking, "My brother is in trouble there," and went faster. John Freeman had to go faster like the speed of sound and got there fast because Gordon needed him where he was. John Freeman looked at road signs and saw Ravenholm with some on's writing under it saying, "You shouldn't come here." So John Freeman almost turned around but heard screaming like Gordon, so he went faster again. John Freeman drove in and did another flip and jumped off his motorbike, and the motorbike took off some head crab zombies in front of John Freeman. John Freeman smiled and walked fast. John then looked on the ground and found weapon, so he picked it up and fired fast at zombie ghosts in front of a house. John Freeman then said, "Zombie ghosts, leave this place." And the zombie ghosts said, "But this is our house." And John Freeman felt sorry for them because they couldn't live there anymore because they were zombie ghosts. So he blew up the house and killed the zombie ghosts so they were at peace. Then John Freeman heard another scream from his brother, so he kept walking really faster to get where he was. Raven Holdem was nothing like the countryside. There was no bird singing and the pants were dead and the dirt was messy and bloody from headcrabs. When John Freeman got to where the screaming was started, he found his brother, Gordon Freeman, fighting the final boss. And Gordon said, "John Freeman, over here!" So John Freeman went there to where Gordon Freeman was fighting. John Freeman fired his bullet from the gun really fast, and the bullets went and shot the final boss in the eyes, and the final boss couldn't see. Gordon Freeman said, "It's time to end this once and for all," and punched the final boss in the face, and the final boss fell. John Freeman said, "Thanks, I could help, bro." And Gordon Freeman said, "You should come here earlier next time," and they laughed. The laugh overed quickly, though, because John Freeman yelled, "Look out, bro," and pointed up to the top of the sky. Gordon Freeman looked up and said, "No! John Freeman, run out of here as fast as you can!" And John walked real fast out. John looked back and saw Gordon get stepped on by the next boss, and he was mad and angry. "I'll get you back, evil boss," John Freeman yelled at the top of lungs. To be continued?
I don't know. I'll at least link it so everyone can find it out, but it's hilarious. Anyway, it's kind of famous. In the gaming community.
I was never into Half-Life that much. There's an equivalent of, Jan and I read it, and I think it was a Twilight fanfiction that was all like, sparkly, yay, blah, blah, and like, it was the most ridiculous thing. And if you, there was a drinking game associated with it where every time the main character's name was mentioned, you had to have like a shot, and, if you played it, you'd pretty much be drunk in one page, but. Yeah.
Send me a link. What?
I think I've got it somewhere. I'm trying to find it in my emails.
Well, I just wanted to bring that up just in case. I'll go back into my corner now.
All right. We haven't really chatted about the, you know, transition or fan fiction as the basis of web fiction and how people transition over from writing fan fiction to writing original fiction. Personally, for me, it just kind of, I guess I just got bored, I don't know, of writing fan fiction. Even now, like, I read it quite a lot, but I was curious to see whether I could create my own worlds and how far I could get on with, I don't know, my own ideas and see if anyone liked me. But, I mean, Kay, what would you say generally pushes people from one to the other? Or, you know, what's the relationship between fan fiction and web fiction audiences? Big question there.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, I think fan fiction is a good way to start to get your writing chops. You know, like you said, it really helped you develop characters, plots, world building, and all of that. And so when someone is developing their writing skills, they're also developing a reading audience. And when it comes time to transition, you kind of already have people who are into your writing. And so, like, if you are willing, if you're going to write under either the same name or, you know, kind of let these few people who follow you in on your new name, if you're going to write under a new name, like, you kind of already have, like, a group of people who are willing to read your writing. And maybe some of them won't want to read it once you've exited the fan fiction world, but there's probably a good chance that one or two of them at least will. And so I think in that way, you've already got a support network, you know what it's like, and as you move into writing your own stuff, I think it just makes it easier. It cushions your way a little bit. You know what to expect, I think. And I don't know about why. It could be the same reason as you. A lot of people, I think, just feel it's time to move on. Mm-hmm. They realize how much time they've invested in fan fiction, and they're like, isn't writing what I always wanted to do? Like, why am I doing this for nothing? Like, fan fiction, unless you're writing, you know, for a TV show or licensed books on, like, you know, Star Trek or whatever, you playing with other people's characters isn't going to get you anywhere. And so, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of this weird, it's a moment in the writer's brain where they just decide, like, it's time to move on, I need to do my own thing. You might still read it, but, like, in terms of devoting your time to writing something, you want to be writing your own stuff.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I don't know if that really makes a whole lot of sense, but...
Yeah, it's like, I guess you could say... fan fiction is like the training wheels, and then eventually you're like, I need to cycle on two wheels and, you know,
right,
make my own way. But I mean the only thing, kind of the differences between the two, obviously besides the obvious that web fiction's original and fan fiction generally is using someone else's sandbox, I'd say that fan fiction also has, at least for outside of the community, there is a negative stigma associated with writing fan fiction and reading it. Not that I share that, because obviously I've been quite active in the community, but I wonder whether this kind of stigma of, you can't really tell people, yeah, I write Harry Potter fan fiction, or
right,
I wonder whether that pushes people on. I mean, did you ever have people, I mean, were you telling people openly that you were into fan fiction, or is it, you know, it's a bit more shameful secret?
Right. It is. It's kind of that little, like, embarrassing little secret. Like, yeah, I read fan fiction, you know. But, and it's really hard to, because, like, the stigma is that, you know, it's full of all these, like, smut and slash and 13-year-old little girls writing about, you know, they're kissing and making out and everything's hearts and whatever. And it's true. There's a lot of horrible stuff out there, but. And you have to, like, dig to find the good stuff. But the internet has really helped that, I think. I mean, like, internet has helped foster, I think, better feelings about it. I think if we were, like, still stuck in, like, the fanzine world, it's I don't know. Oh, that's a tough question.
I like to give you the tough questions. MCM, would you like to try answer or no? Are you there still?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just not immensely qualified for it. I actually find it interesting when you ask any writer, have they ever done fan fiction, and they get that kind of silent moment, and they kind of look left and right, like, what can I distract him with? And it's like, it's not really a shameful thing. Why are you hiding it? But I think there's this notion that if you write it, no matter how great a writer you may be, having written fan fiction kind of takes away the credibility. You know, there's some great fan fiction out there that's like you said, it's like by authors who've done a lot of books and you know, are really great writers. And I even those some of those people are kind of hiding away from it, and it's kind of entertaining almost. I don't know why it's such a shameful thing, because, you know, historically going back, you know, hundreds of years or longer, what is essentially fan fiction has always been really, really popular. But for some reason, recently, in the past 100 years, it's not such a great thing to be doing.
Well, it's a nerd thing, really. But, something just came to me is that, I mean, fan fiction ultimately is kind of what everybody does. Like, every child who watches a show and then goes off and decides, you know, like, oh, I'm Superman, and then they make up their own Superman adventures. Like, we're always doing that all the time, constantly, like, making up our own plot lines in our heads about these characters that we love. And I think, as we get older, like, I'm assuming a lot of us as kids wrote, you know, stories that involved our own characters, but, you know, I don't know, they weren't a big deal. We didn't consider them fan fiction at the time. We didn't know any better. And as we get older, it just, the word fan fiction sounds so juvenile, so nerdy that it's just, I don't know. Even though, like, now there's, like, nerd chic, like, nerd is totally in now, but it's still somehow, like, a point of ridicule that we haven't quite gotten over yet. You know, like, movies, I'm trying to remember. There's some quote out there about some character that talked about, like, I'm going to go update my whatever Star Wars fan fiction. And it's just like, oh, yeah, we already know that character type, you know? And it's not something anyone wants to be labeled as like that fan who is into it that much that they write fan fiction.
Well, I wonder whether, I mean, there's this romantic ideal of the solitary creative author who invents all these things and it's all from their own mind. And so there's this stereotype that fan fiction has no originality whatsoever. And then for someone like me who's, you know, actually read quite a lot of it, some of the work, a lot of it is rubbish, I have to say. A lot of it is very poorly written, and it's crap, and, you know, the plot lines are ridiculous, and the characters are flat. But then when you find a really good story, then you say, you almost wish that it was, sometimes I've found stories that are better written than the series that they're based off of. And so, you know, or come up with creative new ideas, or obviously with Harry Potter, it's really interesting for me to see what another person manages to invent in a world that has all these rules and structures, you know, like the magic has its own way of working, and they come up with a new, almost like a theory of physics of magic. And you're like, yeah, you know, that would really work in the world. And it's seeing that kind of creativity in a limited predefined space is something that I find interesting. When you make your own world, you can just make up your own rules, and, there's less limitations. So I don't know. In some ways, I'd say it could almost be more creative.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass.
But you see that kind of thing in, like, if we're talking like a TV show or something, you get a writer, and I've seen it a few times where it's somebody who's written essentially a fan fiction script gets picked. Then they get to write for the show that they really enjoyed, and then they, you know, the way it works is they have a huge collection of rules that they now have to adhere to, and usually it's the ones who are the fan fiction-y sort of people who do an incredible job meshing into it. There's, I mean, for a lot of books these days, and maybe some movies, you have just one author, but for a lot of kind of entertainment and literature, you have collections of people all working together to do something great, and that's why it's kind of an odd concept that fan fiction is looked down on, because especially in the entertainment business, it's almost nothing is done by just one person anymore.
Right, so, right. And especially since everyone's also working towards keeping all the characters in character, you know, like, and that's, well, at least that's what good fan fiction should keep the characters in character. And, you know, and I see that as really good prep work for if you're going to work on a TV show where you are taking someone else's characters and writing them in new situations and adding to their character plot lines.
Well, I think also that, I guess the one thing I've just come across time and time again, we mentioned that sheepish authors not wanting to admit they've written fan fiction. There's definitely, you know, a contingent of the web fiction world, like online, that very much wants to be seen as separate from fan fiction, even though I would personally think if you're promoting fan fiction and reading online and serialized stories online, web fiction will automatically benefit from that. But there's, because of that whole stigma and stuff, you know, that's why some people call web fiction web lit or web literature, to kind of try separate the two further, to be what we're doing is original, and it's so it's quite, I don't know, it's quite tricky, and I don't know how we can change the world and make people accept that Harry and Draco should be together. But
I swear to God, I'm just gonna throw myself out a window now.
No, but I guess for me as an author, I've always thought one of the pinnacles or goals I want to reach in my career is I'd love to have people write fan fiction of my own work. I would see that as one of the highest compliments that someone can pay me, is to love my story and my characters that much that they want to write about them. They want to know more about them. I mean, I don't. There's some authors that are all proprietorial. Is that a word?
I don't know.
Who are, they're all like jealous, and they're like, oh, no fan fiction is allowed, and these are my characters. But I don't know. If someone wrote loads of fan fiction about my stuff, I'd be happy. What about, Kay, any final words of wisdom on fan fiction and web fiction and the meaning of life?
Oh, geez. No, I think that's, I think we covered it.
MCM?
You want me to have words of wisdom? Okay,
I'll,
you know, give it a chance.
Harry just has nothing to do with Draco. Draco, why do I keep doing that? It's really annoying me. I can see it. Why do I add a Y to the end of his name? It's very strange.
It's because you're secretly attracted to him. We know this.
No. Oh, God. I have a shiver. Stop that. Okay.
Right. So I think it's time to stop abusing MCM and to wrap up our show. Thank you, Kay, very much for joining us and sharing your thoughts and experiences with us. It's been a pleasure getting to know about you and your work. Do you have any last words for our listeners?
No, that's about it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Perfect. We'll add links into the show notes so that everyone can find both Susie's Box and Creative Wrenches. I guess that's the end of our show today, unless MCM wants anything to say. No? Do you not?
Hippos. Okay. What?
Next time we'll discuss, I haven't actually thought of it, but either superhero fiction as suggested by Jim, or possibly a back-to-school tropey thing. But it'll be a surprise, so you'll just have to tune back in and find out. If you have any other ideas or suggestions, don't hesitate to drop us a line at webfictionworld@gmail.com. Thanks again to our guest CSK and everyone tuning in. My name is Anna Hart, and you've been listening to Web Fiction World. Until our next show, keep reading, keep typing.